Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Scott Miller in just a few moments, the National Major League Baseball columnist for the Bleacher Report. But first, our play-by-play call of the day with our good friend Doug Birdsong as Nathan Davis wins his 200th career game at Bucknell.
15 to shoot, 225 in overtime. Bison with the ball in a three-point lead. Kinsey pulls a string on a three. Big goal! And he was F-O-U-L-E-D. That spells fouled! Oh, my almighty! Ring it up, you Maple Leaf Marvel, you! Very similar to a huge three-hit in the Patriot League Championship against Lehigh. Got fouled by Fox. That will be his fourth. And McKenzie hits the free throw, and he has 15.
Four-point play. I did the Penn State-Michigan State game last night. I did not make a call like that. Way to go, Doug.
I was waiting for it, though. I was waiting.
Very, very colorful. Scott Miller, national MLB columnist for Bleacher Report, now joins us. Hi, Scott. How are you? Thanks a lot for your time.
My pleasure, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. Scott, this is about as slow a time as we can remember for free agents. For example, a hitter like J.D. Martinez is out there still waiting. I guess he has an offer from the Red Sox. What do you put behind the pace with which free agents have been signing, or should I better say not signing, this offseason?
Well, I think there are, as usual, Steve, I think there are multiple suspects. There's not just one reason why. And what I would say, start with the last basic agreement negotiated between the players' union and the owners. And I think most people agree the players, made a mistake by agreeing, again, to keep the luxury tax, payroll tax where it is. So I think what you've got to start with is you've got teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers, in other words, the big spenders, that really are reluctant to go over that $197 million player payroll. It's essentially acting as an unofficial salary cap, because if they go over it, then you end up paying millions and millions of dollars in luxury tax to be spread among the smaller market teams. So you've got big spending teams that really are reluctant to do that. Secondly, I think you've got a number of teams now that have watched what the Houston Astros and the Chicago Cubs have done over the last few seasons, and that is strip down your team to the studs, go for a total rebuilding job, some call it tanking, collect draft picks and amateur players and try to rebuild. What you've got right now is a handful of teams doing that, from the Chicago White Sox to the San Diego Padres to, the Cincinnati Reds to the Philadelphia Phillies and on and on. So that limits the number of teams that are going to be out in the free agent market spending, because they're not interested in that. They're interested in, cutting as much payroll as they can and going with youth. Thirdly and lastly, I would say the slow winter is because we've reached a point in the game where analytics has really become king. And so, what you've got is every front office now is like a cookie cutter of the next front office. You've got a bunch of analytic-minded general managers that view things through the same prism. They're looking for the same type of players. They love the under the under the radar type of guys. They're all reluctant to give out big contracts for the superstars, And I think that has contributed significantly to slowing the market as well.
That was actually going to be my next question. That was about the fact that there are so many analytics-based general managers out there now compared to before. And some analytics will tell you that the older a player gets, the perception is less important production based on analytics. And I kind of thought that that was playing some role. I agree with you completely. And I thought that that's playing some role, that they're using the analytics to their favor of staying away from free agents because older players don't produce the analytics they're looking for.
No, and we are in agreement on that point. And then if you take what you just said, Steve, one step further, and tie things back to the 90s and the early 2000s, the steroid era, players age at a natural progression now. I mean, you know, if you look at like 03 to 05, you had, you know, Barry Bonds, and I know he's an exception, but he's 38, 39 years old, putting up the numbers of a 30-year-old. And he wasn't alone. I mean, you had a number of these guys, like mid to late 30s, who were still producing as if they were 30. And basically, since Major League Baseball instituted PED testing in 2004, that's taken the game back. You know, it's not only reduced the number of behemoths hitting home runs, but it's taken the game back to where players play their age. And now, you know, the analytics people, you know, you don't have to be an analytics person even to see that today's game, you know, if you're 32 or 33, your game is eroding. You know, you're not just entering some crazy prime.
Right, exactly. I think what JD Martinez, I want to say, is he's right around that age now, right?
Yes.
He's around, I want to say he's 32 now.
Yeah, I mean, he was a late bloomer, you know, there's no question about that. And, yeah, I think you're right. I'm looking at, he's 30. He will be 31 next August 21st. So, you know, not like he's 32 or 33, but, you know, Eric Hosmer is 28. He's another free agent that's out there, and that's, you know, one of Scott Boras' selling points on Eric Hosmer is, you know, this kid is only 28. He's already helped Kansas City get to two World Series. They've won one. He's only 28. He's got many years of prime left. J.D. Martinez, and you're right, I still expect him to sign with the Red Sox when all is said and done. But who knows? But, yeah, 30, not Eric Hosmer young, kind of mid-range for a free agent. You know, he's got a couple more years of prime left, you would think. But, you know, it's not like he's got five more years of his prime.
Exactly. When the first collective bargaining agreement many moons ago came up, an important factor for the players was to make sure they had pension money. Times have changed. Big contracts can compensate for pension money. Do you expect, you know, is that why for players, this contract for them is pivotal because they've banked on that and don't care as much about the pension money?
The current basic agreement contract?
Yeah, the current basic agreement. In other words, the current player, like a Hosmer or a Martinez, they're banking on a big contract right now based on performance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the pension part of it, which was so critical in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, is not critical to them anymore.
No, the only real way that pension is, the only players to whom that pension is still critical, you know, are your bench warmers and your reserves and your guys that are just trying to scrap and claw and hang on to that major league job. And, you know, the ones that are getting, but you know, the major league minimum, which is still about $500,000, you know, I mean, that's a pretty good living. But if you're talking about, if you're the 25th man on the team and you're making the major league minimum, which obviously $500,000, who wouldn't want that, you know, who would argue with that? But if you're looking to try to set yourself up for life, or at least put yourself in position to get a running start on the rest of your life, because, you know, let's remember, when you're 26, you know, fans, I think, a look and say, oh, my gosh, this guy's making $500,000 a year. He's not even a top-paid guy. What's he complaining about? But, you have to remember that when these careers end, these guys have to make some hard decisions, and not everybody's set for life. So the guys that are scrapping and to hang on and are making that $500,000 short-term, that's a really, really nice salary. But they're the ones that the pension is going to mean a lot to. But you're right, the Hosmers and the Max Scherzers at $210 million, so, over the length of this contract. I don't think you need to have a financial advisor even on call to make sure that money lasts you for the rest of your life.
All right. You talked about franchises doing things in certain ways. The Pirates had locked up certain players to avoid arbitration for years, like a McCutcheon. They did so with Polanco. They've done so with Marte and so forth. But now they're in the mode where they've dealt McCutcheon. They never got that far with Gerrit Cole. Are the Pirates following the formula that you just outlined, or do you know what the Pirates are doing?
Well, I think their next few moves are going to tell. I mean, it looks pretty clear. There's no question they're hitting the reboot button. But now the question is, are they? There are two different reboot buttons you can hit. One is, be proactive, trade some of your big guys, try to build around what you've got left. The other is just strip things down, like I was saying, to the studs and start over. And I don't think the Pirates, they're certainly not there yet. I mean, they've still got, Starling Marte, Gregory Polanco, Josh Harrison. They've still got some pieces that you can win with. Pitching-wise, obviously they need more in the rotation, behind Jameson Taillon and Ivan Nova. But, I think their next few moves are going to be telling. I mean, Josh Harrison already complained. I think he told The Athletic that he'd like to be traded. That tells you right out of the gate that even some of the players left behind after the McCutcheon and Gerrit Cole deals think to themselves, the writing's on the wall, we can't win. I mean, you look in that National League West, the National League Central Division, you see the Cubs, you see an improved Brewers team, you see St. Louis, who always, is competitive. It's a pivotal time for the Pirates right now. I know a lot of people, fans in Pittsburgh, rightfully so, are getting cranky, and there have been some calls on Bob Nutting to sell the team. But, they've never been known, obviously, to go overboard with their spending, but they're certainly taking a step back. Whether it goes all the way down to total rebuild, hard to say, but no question taking a step or two back.
And Scott, obviously the Phillies went through that process. Where do you see them in their current process right now based on what they've done with a couple of moves along the way?
Yeah, you'd like to think that the worst of the pain is behind them. Hoskins was such a great story last year. The thing is, you're never completely out of the woods. From a perspective in baseball where Hoskins had that great rookie year. Now, is he going to have a sophomore slump? I mean, there are plenty of guys in history like Joe Charbonneau in Cleveland that have had one great year and then disappeared. I don't expect that. I think everything I hear from baseball people about Hoskins is great work ethic, his head's in the right place. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a keeper for a while. But, in baseball, it's not just the one year. It's you look at guys' resumes. You judge players over what they've done over 3, 4, 5 years, not just one year. So, I think, certainly they need some more pitching. Signing Pat Neshek over the winter, building the bullpen a little bit the way they did. We'll see. But I think, from where they were 2 years ago to where they are now, I think that the Phillies are in reasonably good shape. Another wild card is the new manager. Your Gabe Kapler, the rookie manager, never managed before. We'll see what he brings.
Which, I'm glad you brought that up. I'll make this my final question because I really appreciate the time. And, Scott, that deals with the new manager. We talked about general managers being so interested and how analytics help them make decisions. A lot of the new managers match up with their GMs on analytics. How interested are you to watch how the game is run with analytics versus maybe gut instinct?
Well, I think it's a worse game today than it was 10 or 20 years ago. I'm less interested to watch because managers basically have been neutered in the last couple of years. Yeah. The field manager especially has become a middle management guy. You know, Dave Roberts out in Los Angeles with the Dodgers has used his big buzzword, and I think it fits most everywhere now, is collaboration. A manager is now in collaboration with the front office and the analytics people.
Right.
He's basically charged with carrying out their philosophies. And, you know, the manager's biggest jobs right now are managing the personalities in the clubhouse, making sure everybody's on the same page, and being a face of the franchise all summer long, and, you know, playing nice with the media. And it's amazing to me. You look how many of these managers now, they're all nice guys, which is great. I'm all for nice guys, but they're all nice guys because they're the face of the franchise, and they're on the TV so much all summer long. You know, a club realizes we want a really nice guy who projects, you know, goodness and warmth to be beamed into all our fans' television sets. You know, I mean, I miss the days. I covered the Minnesota Twins for a number of years in the 90s. Tom Kelly, great manager.
Oh,
one
yes.
of the last of the old breeds, a curmudgeonly old guy. And I say that with respect. I have a great relationship with Tom Kelly, and I have for years. But the Dick Williamses, the Billy Martins, the Tom Kellys, you know,
Earl
they just couldn't
Weaver.
Manage today. What's that?
Earl Weaver.
Earl Weaver's another one. Yep. If anybody from the front office came down about 2 o'clock in the afternoon into one of those guys' offices and said, "Hey, let's talk about the lineup tonight," Earl Weaver or Dick Williams or Tom Kelly would have looked at the front office guy sitting in front of him like he had five heads. There would have been steam coming out of the manager's ears, and he would have invited the front office guy to take a hike using words that even the military, the Marines, probably wouldn't use. You know, and today's game with all the analytics, I'll say this. I mean, I could go on for another 15 minutes, but, you know, the one number I'm looking at right now, I mean, analytics has brought us to a point, and I'm not bagging completely on analytics, but like everything, there's good, I think, in a lot of different areas, including analytics, but not following it blindly. You take a little bit from analytics, you take a little bit from old school baseball, you take a little bit here, a little bit here. To me, that's the way the game should be played. Analytics has for years preached strikeouts are not a bad thing. Strikeouts can be oftentimes a good out because it's better than hitting into a double play. Okay, that's true. There's an example. That's a good part of analytics. No question. Sometimes you'd rather have a strikeout than a double play. But that said, it's ratcheted up to where strikeouts are fine. So we've got record numbers of strikeouts now. And this is where I say I think the game was better 20 years ago than it is today. Because the number I'm looking at again this year, the last 2 years, roughly speaking, between 31 and 32% of at-bats in the major leagues have ended with either a strikeout, a walk, or in a few cases, a hit batter. So what that means is about a third of the time, seriously, about a third of the time now, the batter is going to the plate and either walking to first base or walking back to the dugout without putting the ball in play.
Right.
You talk about dead time in the game that they're so worried about right now, a third of the time the ball is not put in play. That is just bad, bad baseball.
And you just perfectly articulated what I've mentioned many times on this show. We are absolutely on the same page.
Look, we're on the same page. Yep.
Yeah, we're same page. Love to have you back on at some point if you get the opportunity. That was a lot of fun.
All right, my pleasure, Steve. Fun on my end as well. Thanks. Have a good day. And the sun's got to be here soon. Spring training's right around the corner.
It's got to be. Scott, it's got to be. Thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Scott Miller, national MLB columnist for Bleacher Report. That was quite a conversation there. Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports, on the transfer rule and on Michigan State in the next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We have been rolling through the guests today, haven't we?
Been a great week.
Tomorrow, Jerry Kramer on the show, a guy that I hope that on Monday I'm saying is a new Hall of Famer. Jerry will be on the show at 3:35 tomorrow. Jeff Byers tomorrow. We'll preview Penn State, Ohio State wrestling with Jeff tomorrow at 4:06. And picks at the end. The Super Bowl is now worth 1,000 points, where if it works out and I win, I will win by 1 point. I am 999 points behind.
As Uncle Cy used to say on Duck Dynasty, it's on like bing bong, Jack. It all comes down to one game.
Did I ever tell you the Duck Dynasty story?
I've not heard this from you.
Okay, the day of the Iowa caucus, which would have been, what, 2 years ago now?
Sure.
Okay, so the day of the Iowa caucus, we have to go into Iowa City to play Iowa, but there was going to be a big storm. So, and the game was going to be on Wednesday. So instead of going Tuesday, they said, look, for the safety of everybody, we're going to send the team in Monday night. Well, that Monday was the Iowa caucus. And I want to say, what, Ted Cruz won it, I think. And Donald Trump was second, and Marco Rubio was third. And then nobody knows who won the Democratic one. To this day, nobody knows. They stopped and they declared whatever. And it was, oh, well. And so we're in there and we're watching this. And we go down to the restaurant bar area. And there's this guy in the corner with his head down. He lifts his head up. It's Jeb Bush in the hotel. I don't know what he finished. Eighth, ninth, I don't know. I mean, I think Dick Girardi got more write-in votes than he doesn't live there. So we're walking out of the restaurant, whatever, after seeing him, and the players are walking by, and they said, and the players looked at us and said, you won't believe who's here in the hotel. I said, well, yeah, we just saw him. Jeb Bush is here. They go, Jeb Bush? What? What are you talking about? The guys from Duck Dynasty are here. Oh, I love you. Kind of gave you a perspective on the whole thing.
It
really did. Yeah. In fact, the guys from Duck Dynasty all got more write-in votes. All right. Let's bring in the old friend, respected friend, Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. Dennis, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Steve, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's get to the proposal part. And these are just proposals at this point. You've done a great job of keeping track of all of this. And I believe it's through the Big 12 and Iowa State and Baylor made the proposal on transfers. Lay it out, Dennis, as to what that proposal is, and then we'll ask about your initial thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think it's first key to understand that any of these things that go through the legislation is going to include the end of coaches and schools blocking players, you know, giving them a list of schools they can't go to. That was decided really early on. This proposal from the Big 12 basically says that if a coach is fired or leaves on his own, any player can transfer without restriction. That includes any school that goes on, gets a postseason ban from the NCAA. The difference is, and the give back is really, that in every sport now, there will be a one-year sit out in year of residence. Before, there were only five sports that had that. So this kind of addresses the academic part, but I think the free agency part, when the coach leaves or is fired, is key, and is probably just.
All right, so now that's been laid out, and then they're going to tweak this along the way. Have you heard any thoughts about any tweaking to this, or is it just sitting out there right now for people to at least make an open comment about it?
What makes the Big 12 proposal so unique is that, other than that, everything's possible. Everything's up in the air. Anything could happen. What makes this news is the Big 12 has done its research and put itself out there, put its front foot out there. Here's what we think should happen. I know the coaches in general are worried about the possibility of just straight free agency. I don't think that's going to happen. In other words, players can transfer without restriction anytime, anywhere. I don't think that's going to happen. But something needs to happen. I think a big part of this, Steve, is that the Board of Governors, the NCAA Board of Governors, has told this transfer working group, give us something by June. We're going to have something by June. Then the question just becomes, when is it going to be implicated or started? In the 2018 football season or 2019 season?
Yeah, because one of them came up and they said it might be implemented in August of 2018, which, of course, you know, we're talking 6 months away.
Yeah.
Unintended consequences. Anytime there's any proposal, to be thorough, you have to go through, quote, unintended consequences. So let's map out a scenario. You and I both know, obviously, Jimbo Fisher left Florida State. He went to Texas A&M. And with the late signing period being after the regular season, as opposed to college basketball, which is before the regular season, what is to say, and this is just a pure, let's take a wild example, Jimbo looks at 20 recruits and says, I got 20 Florida State players that are coming with me. And 10 to 15 other Florida State players say, I don't want to play for Willie Taggart, and they go someplace else, and now they're down 35 scholarship players. What about, quote, that potential unintended consequence?
Well, the players can't follow the departing coach and get the waiver. So that's that. You cannot follow the coach.
Now, is that in this proposal, yeah. Dennis?
That's in this proposal.
Okay.
It's in that proposal. So you can go, but you'd have to sit out of here just like everybody else. So it's not going to be – I see a lot of coaches calling this the wild, wild west. And no, it's not going to be like that. What it does is it calls the bluff on the commissioners and the ADs and the NCAA, because there's a sentence in the national letter of intent that says, and it was put in there strategically just for this purpose, you commit to a school, not a coach. Okay, all right. Well, if you really believe that, then what's your pushback on this? They're committing to a school. You know, and look, we all know that isn't true, but for them to use that excuse is a bit hypocritical. Either don't use the excuse or just take it out of the nest. Stupid to put it in there anyway, because we know majority of these players commit to coaching.
Right. You and I both know that, Dennis, and
yeah.
That's exactly right. You didn't say all, but you said the majority, which
that's
I think
right.
is exactly the right word to use. Now let's go back to the other extreme as to why this proposal is on the table. Jared Udoff was going to transfer out of Wisconsin after redshirting, and Bo Ryan put together, I think, a list of 23 schools that he would not allow him to transfer to. I think they're all the Big Ten schools, and I want to say it was all the ACC schools because of the ACC challenge, one game. I mean, that's one of the reasons a proposal like this is on the table. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Historically, I don't know why coaches are allowed to do that. It's not an NCAA bylaw. No one can tell me. You know, it's just kind of evolved out of nothing over the years. The second thought is, I've thought this for years. I thought it was always a bit of Perry High School and paranoia. Who cares? I think a kid at Iowa State right now is being blocked because he doesn't want to go to North. Or they want him to go to Northern Iowa because they play Northern Iowa. Come on. One place, an FCS opponent, is going to make a difference. And look, who cares if they do? Isn't this all about equity and avoiding legal liability? The average student, 26%, I think, of all students, somebody told me, transfer. Well, they don't have to sit out, the regular student. So why should these guys? Because they're bound by an athletic contract. It isn't fair.
And then the other, was it, you said 26% of all students end up transferring, and then the other part is a lot of people will realize, now let's take college basketball, it's been going on for a while, 40% end up transferring, and some of them are grad transfers, which means they've done their part, they got their degree.
Yeah, that's right, and I quote one AD in the story regarding that 40% transfer rate in basketball. He said it's a broken sport. I don't know if this proposal even addresses that, because again, it would impact just the coaches leaving, just the coaches who get fired, and that's not going to add or subtract significantly from that 40%.
Does this proposal cover those who have signed letters of intent but are still in high school? So in other words, I'm sitting there and I've signed a letter of intent, now the coach leaves or is fired. Am I now free to go anywhere, or is it up to the school to turn me loose?
You're talking about could it happen retroactively? I think that's what you're talking about. I'm not the NCAA, but I think this is the case. Let's say this is implemented August 1st. The clock starts then. If Shea Patterson is still fighting the NCAA over getting immediate transfer to Michigan, it doesn't include him because he already had a case under the old rules, which would be rectified and would be rectified by then anyway. So I see a lot on Twitter, oh, this is going to be relief for Shea Patterson. No, I don't think so. First of all, we don't even know it's going to be in effect by 2018 August. And second of all, I don't need to be grandfathered in. In fact, I'm almost certain of that.
Yeah, and there's certain cases, for example, that come up as a nice case look at this. Ryan Mallett was a great case of that, where he was brought in under Lloyd Carr. That's the system Lloyd Carr played. You and I both know Rich Ross played that kind of system. Pat White was his kind of quarterback. So, I mean, this is the kind of, there are always reasons to transfer, but that's an example of one where you say, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. There are three real-world examples right now that can really be pointed out. You mentioned Jimbo at Florida State. Those players could have left. The Arizona players, Rich Rod, when he got fired last month, could have left. Ole Miss got another year of postseason ban late last year. Those kids could have left. It includes teams with postseason ban. You could have left. All those seniors, rising seniors, can leave at Ole Miss. Well, you know, what would happen is then anybody could leave from Ole Miss. And look, boy, that might be as good a penalty is any. People say, how do you justifiably penalize these schools? Boy, when you got that hanging over your head, if you get a postseason ban, anybody can leave, there's your penalty right there.
Right. I'll switch gears just for a bit because it's great to have you on. I was at Michigan State last night, so I got a little bit of the temperature there by being on the ground. Watching it from your perspective, who's seen a lot, what's your initial feel of where that is? Because you and I both know it's going to go on for a long time.
Yeah, the comparisons to me with Penn State are financial. Now that we have Penn State as a template, I think we can look at Michigan State enduring liability in lawsuits of $300 to $400 million, because that's exactly what's happened to Penn State. I think we all agree Larry Nassar was bad. He was a monster. What culpability D'Antonio and Izzo had is yet to be determined. My takeaway continues to be that Michigan State got incredibly bad legal advice in this thing and may have cost Mark Hollis his job last week. Hang with me here, Steve. We all know about the lawyers in Michigan State fighting these Freedom of Information Act requests. Redacted, slow play, ESPN sued them, Michigan State sued them back. ESPN finally got documents that they could have had, I don't know, 2 years ago, and had a lot of this in the grinder already. But guess when they all pop? Guess when ESPN gets the story ready, now that they have all the information? You know, 2 days before the OTL thing is about to come out, Larry Nassar's sentencing hearing is last Tuesday. I don't think there's any question Mark Hollis resigned because of that. And that's directly on the general counsel and the legal advice they're getting there, and it continues to be bad. They're still slow playing stuff.
Yeah, and this is I was talking with somebody with their group yesterday, and I said here's going to be one of the issues you're going to face, just real world. I said every press conference that the two of them do, whether Tom Izzo or Mark D'Antonio, said nobody's going to care about how great a quarterback Brian Lewerke is, and nobody's going to care about Miles Bridges's NBA potential. They're going to be asked repeatedly at every press conference they go to about this.
Yeah, because there's going to be a slow drip. If anybody thinks this is the end of it, you don't think there are going to be other cases that come to light? I mean, again, using Penn State as an example. And I thought that Tom Izzo, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not pronouncing lack of sympathy on the victims, but they let Tom Izzo hang out to dry. You saw ESPN showed up at every availability he had. And he's been coached up badly by the lawyers. You know, we'll support the victims and blah, blah, blah. You know, they continue to roll him out there to the point that, you know, it may cost Tom Izzo before it costs Mark D'Antonio, if at all it costs either one, because this is a really bad look for him, what they've done to him, and I talk about Michigan State and his program and recruiting going forward.
In fact, Michigan State had one game on ESPN in the month of January. They've got five on ESPN in February, starting Saturday night.
Yeah. Well, were those added, or do we know those are there?
I think we already know they're there. You know, in basketball, you and I both.
I mean,
know.
They are ranked top five.
Yeah, that's why they're there. Yeah. Right. Yeah, they're already there because I think it was predetermined they'd be there. It just turned out out of circumstance.
But it happened, and to the point that it's really a sensitive situation to talk about basketball in those situations, you know, because this, for better or worse, this is the story right now. This is, you know, either worse than Penn State or pretty darn close to it when everything is said and done. And it's really hard to talk about sports in those situations.
I mean, and there's a media overflow there last night. They weren't there because Penn State was in town to play hoops.
Right.
Dennis,
they're looking to see how, at some level, Michigan State plays with these quote-unquote distractions, which sort of minimizes what these victims have gone through as well. And, you know, that was the case at Penn State as well. I'm sorry, Steve. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I wanted to hear that answer. No, that's exactly right. It's playing out every single week, and you can see the strain on his face. I mean, he walked by me twice last night. It was like it looked like, you know, he hadn't slept in days.
Yeah, it's too bad. Whatever happens to these guys, I think the fact remains these three guys, Hollis, D'Antonio, and Izzo, were three of the most respected guys in college athletics. And I'm not saying they're not, you know, they're not guilty of anything, because in the end it may be really, really bad. But that's part of the tragedy of this, that three of the most respected guys in the industry, you got to be wary. You got to have oversight.
Great reporters like you always are looking for truth, so you're always looking for facts. How do you do? I mean, I've read your stuff for years. You and I have talked privately for years about different things. You're always looking to get facts to build your stories. But how difficult is it to have truth versus perception?
It's a balance. I'm working on a story right now regarding Michigan State, where it's I don't know, it's hard to explain. I'll have to read it, but you know, are they all bad? Do they have lack of oversight? Are they complicit? Should they lose their jobs if we decide yes to all those questions? You know, and frankly, right now, who's going to make that decision at Michigan State? The Board of Trustees, I don't think, can be trusted. And there's active investigations, I think, by the governor and attorney general. So, you know, it's just sad. And I wish I was writing about Gaines, frankly. I think we all are.
Exactly. Dennis, always a pleasure. Appreciate the insight, as always, and hope we get a chance to talk again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Steve.
Dennis Dodge, CBS Sports. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Okay, welcome back. Jeff Byers on the show tomorrow to preview Penn State, Ohio State wrestling. Also an update on Jason Nolf. He will not be going this weekend. He will not wrestle the rest of the regular season, but the door is open maybe to the postseason. We'll get an update from Jeff on that tomorrow. And also a preview of Penn State and Ohio State, which will be in Rec Hall at 8 o'clock on Saturday. Part of a big weekend here. You got events all over the place here this weekend. Hockey with Notre Dame tomorrow. Hockey at 4 o'clock with Notre Dame on Saturday. Basketball with Iowa on Saturday at 6. Wrestling with Ohio State at 8 on Saturday.
Men's volleyball, too?
Men's volleyball, swimming and diving. Men's tennis, women's tennis. Lady Line basketball Sunday at 2 with Michigan State. A long list. Long, long list.
Find a great place to park and let the car sit.
That's one problem I don't have. I got a parking space.
Yes, you do.
I'm good. I'm all good there.
We're going to be good tomorrow. Can't wait to hear your conversation with Jerry Kramer.
Jerry Kramer on the show tomorrow. The great Green Bay Packer, whom I hope we're saying is a Hall of Famer on Monday. And Jeff Byers tomorrow. And then picks. I'll take Super Bowl picks for $5,000, Alex. Because I need all 5,000 to somehow make up ground.
Your brother's just going to hang back and watch us go at it.
Absolutely. That's what the suit says in the sales meetings.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. And on WKOK.com.